I'm going to call to order the February 13th Ways and Means Committee. Mr. Smith will note the roll. Once we have a quorum, we'll move the minutes from the January 30th meeting. But in the meantime, we have the legislative auditor here to present a report on fiscal notes. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Nobles.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and with me at the table is Joel Alter, who's a manager in our program evaluation division. Thank you for this opportunity to present this report to you. And the reason we have this report for you is because, as you know, of late, fiscal notes have, at least some of them, have gotten a bad reputation. And that's a serious concern, because fiscal notes are and should be an important part of the legislative process. They are a mechanism established in law by which you are supposed to get assessments, estimates of the impact of proposed legislation. And the value of that is really dependent upon fiscal notes being accurate, objective, and timely. And those are challenging objectives to achieve. Certainly, as Yogi Berra once reminded us, making predictions can be difficult, especially about the future. So that's one point that makes it challenging, but also because sometimes we are asking people to make projections and estimates on legislative language that may not fully be formed yet. In other words, sometimes, even despite our best efforts, some legislation that has been proposed may have some ambiguities, and so that's a challenge. But another challenge is that we ask people to do fiscal notes in a very compressed time frame. So we want to acknowledge that there are challenges, but that does not diminish the fact that it is important that when fiscal notes come to you, they be as close to accurate, objective, and timely as at all possible. Now, we do know that there are some fiscal notes that have fallen short. And in our evaluation, we looked at some of those. In fact, we looked at 25 fiscal notes that had been subject to considerable criticism and concern. But because we wanted to look more broadly and determine whether or not we have a problem with just some fiscal notes, or we have a systemic problem with the delivery of fiscal notes, we also looked at 50 fiscal notes that we selected randomly. So part of our methodology was indeed to examine in considerable detail a number of fiscal notes. We also did some survey work and some other things as well to try to give you as full a picture as possible. So, Madam Chair, with that from me, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Alter. But if you do have your quorum, we'd be we'd welcome a pause if you want to take that vote.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Nobles. And we do have a quorum. Representative Davids moves approval of the January 30th minutes. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. All right. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Alter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name is Joel Alter with the Legislative Auditor's Office. Also with us here today, two other staff who worked on the project, Julie Trupke-Bastidas and Dan Jacobson, who may help with questions later on. Let me just begin with a quick overview of what we found in this evaluation. And as Jim said, overall, we did find problems in Minnesota's fiscal note that suggest a need for some adjustment. On the other hand, we did not conclude that Minnesota's fiscal note system is fundamentally broken. In our view, fiscal notes prepared by agencies should receive close scrutiny. They're not always correct. They rely on assumptions, and sometimes those assumptions should be questioned. Our report suggests some statutory changes to the fiscal note process, but some of the changes that we recommend in our report are ones that are not easily legislated. For example, ensuring adequate communication between legislators and agencies, and ensuring that fiscal notes are written in a way that is clear and transparent. Before we get to our findings, let me just start with a little bit of background. First, what is a fiscal note? And obviously, you deal with them regularly, but for those who aren't as familiar, a fiscal note is an estimate of the public financial impact of proposed legislation. It's prepared in response to a legislative request. And I also want to take a minute to clarify that what we're talking about today are just that, fiscal notes, as opposed to revenue estimates that are prepared by the Department of Revenue. Revenue estimates are prepared also based on a legislative request, but they focus specifically on the revenue impact of a tax bill. And our evaluation looked at some revenue estimates, but that really wasn't the focus of our attention. Fiscal notes have been authorized in Minnesota law since 1974. There is nothing in state law or legislative rules that binds the legislature to use the estimates in fiscal notes. They are advisory in nature. Through contacts with other states and reviews of other states' laws and rules, we categorized the fiscal note arrangements of all 50 states. What we concluded was that in 31 states, responsibility for fiscal notes primarily rests with the legislative branch. In 11 states, including Minnesota, that responsibility primarily rests with the executive branch. And in 7 states, both branches play key roles. This next slide breaks down the sequence of steps in the fiscal note process. The process begins, as I said, when a legislative committee chair, often working through a fiscal analyst, enters a formal request for a fiscal note into an information system run by the Department of Management and Budget. MMB determines which agency, or it may be several of them, shall be assigned to draft the fiscal note. Fiscal notes are usually assigned to executive branch agencies, but it can also be assigned to a legislative or a judicial agency. Agency staff draft the fiscal note document, and after agency officials sign off, MMB reviews the draft, and they can either approve it or they may have questions and go back to the agency for to request more work. Once approved by MMB, the fiscal note is sent to, among others, the requester, and it's posted on a public website. As Jim said, one of the challenges of the fiscal note process is that it occurs in a pretty compressed period of time during the legislative session. The red line on this chart shows, and this is an average over the past 11 years, the average number of fiscal notes requested by the legislature each year broken into two-week periods. And as you can see, the peak period is during March, when hundreds of requests for fiscal notes are typically submitted by agencies. And then we add to that the yellow line, which shows a similar pattern for when fiscal notes are completed. There's a steep climb up to a peak during the last 2 weeks of March, and then a sharp decline. A few other facts about fiscal note practices. Legislators can request multiple fiscal notes for a bill if there are multiple versions of the bill. But for 84% of the bills for which there was a fiscal note request, only one was requested. 83% of fiscal notes result in a completed fiscal note. There are times when the legislative requesters of fiscal notes withdraw those requests. And there are also times, especially at the end of session, when a request is made, but the fiscal note is not completed by the agency. About 69% of fiscal notes are prepared for bills as originally introduced, but they can also be requested for amended bills or for individual amendments. A few agencies have particularly large fiscal note workloads, and at the top of the list, the Departments of Education, Human Services, and Public Safety. One of the things that we evaluated was the format of Minnesota's fiscal notes, and there are a number of things about the current format that we think work pretty well. We think it's good having a table on the front page of the fiscal note that summarizes the estimated dollar impact to the state. We think it's reasonable that that table covers 4 or 5 fiscal years of estimates, rather than, let's say, presenting a single biennium's worth of estimates. The format also allows agencies an opportunity for narrative commentary. And that's where agencies can discuss their assumptions, their calculations, or describe alternative scenarios. On the other hand, in our view, the fiscal note format doesn't work particularly well for some of the pension bills we reviewed. For example, the front page of the fiscal note sometimes doesn't effectively portray state-level costs. Sometimes those fiscal notes show local costs but don't distinguish them from the state-level costs. And sometimes that front page doesn't convey the longer-term impacts, such as a bill's impact on unfunded pension liabilities. One of the areas of key concern identified in our review is the transparency of fiscal notes. If fiscal notes aren't clear and well explained, that can contribute to legislative distrust or suspicion. Legislators might wonder, where did those numbers come from? How did the agency get to that? What were the assumptions that they used? The law does require agencies to state the assumptions underlying their estimates, and we found that in most cases agencies do that. Not always. For example, sometimes when agencies assert that there will be no fiscal impact from a bill, we found that there is sometimes not much explanation, if any. But while agencies do typically list their assumptions, they don't always justify them or do a good job of explaining them. One example from last year, there was a bill that I'm sure many of you are familiar with that proposed to consolidate back office functions of state government. It had a fairly lengthy fiscal note. It had quite a bit of narrative discussion, but the fiscal note didn't explain why it assumed that 75 new full-time staff would be needed for what it called interagency teams to implement the bill. And that was a key cost driver of that fiscal note. In some other cases, agencies need to do a better job of basically just showing the math that helped them to arrive at the estimate. While fiscal notes are not always adequately explained or clear, we did conclude that a majority of fiscal notes that we reviewed over the past 3 years appeared to contain plausible estimates. We did occasionally see math errors or omissions that were obvious just from a careful reading of the fiscal note. Usually these were small, but not always. We saw one fiscal note in which the agency apparently forgot to include the dollar estimate for a portion of the bill, and the result was an underestimate in the fiscal note on the order of $20 to $25 million. Some fiscal notes offer estimates that are based on questionable assumptions, and starting on page 56 of the report, we have a number of examples of that type of fiscal note. Specifically, some fiscal notes that have not followed MMB instructions, that have been internally inconsistent, that have used not very well accepted estimating methods. Sometimes agencies have also acknowledged putting minimal effort into the fiscal notes for bills that they didn't think were going to go anywhere in the legislative process. So there have been issues that we discussed. There has also been legislative frustration about fiscal notes that show no savings for initiatives that were specifically intended to produce savings. We observed that agencies have struggled to estimate savings for bills that show or that propose large-scale reforms or proposals that have little or no precedent. Estimates for that type of bill can be difficult to produce in a few days, and sometimes agencies have been cautious about presuming savings that might or might not materialize. Fiscal notes are typically prepared by agencies that would be affected by the bill, not by an independent third party. And so there have been some questions raised about objectivity. We don't, in this report, discount the possibility that agency biases may sometimes play a role in fiscal notes. But I would also say that bias is a difficult thing to prove. Our report offers no direct evidence of bias. MMB staff and legislative fiscal analysts expressed the opinion to us that at least sometimes agency biases do appear to be reflected in fiscal notes. One thing that we looked for in our review was to see if there was biased language in the fiscal note itself. State law prohibits fiscal notes from expressing opinions on bills, and what we found is that generally they do not. Also, we wondered whether there have been times when staff from the governor's office or top-level agency officials have ever intervened inappropriately in the fiscal note process. Let's say to try to give the fiscal note a particular slant or a spin that's consistent with a policy preference. We solicited information from agency fiscal note staff, that is the coordinators who work day-to-day on fiscal notes, and we solicited this information in confidence. All of these staff denied having seen inappropriate interventions by top-level agency officials or the governor's office in either the current administration or the previous one. Again, if there is bias in fiscal notes, and it's possible that occasionally there may well be, I think the best way to identify it is transparency. If fiscal notes are clear, about their assumptions and their calculations, then they can be subjected to scrutiny. Next, I want to comment on the timeliness of fiscal notes. When a legislative fiscal analyst submits a request for a fiscal note, they can designate a due date. And if they don't designate a due date, then there is a default. MMB's information system automatically assigns that fiscal note a due date of 5 working days from the date of the request. Working days don't include weekends and holidays. What we found is that 98% of fiscal notes have a due date of 5 working days or less from the date of the request. Only 2% of fiscal notes, the ones shown in yellow in the pie chart, have a due date of more than 5 working days. And keep in mind that when agencies are asked to prepare fiscal notes, there is also some time that's taken in this process for MMB to make the allocation of the fiscal note request to the right agencies and to do a review after the agencies have drafted the fiscal note. And all of that has to be within that due date that's specified. What we found also is that over the last 11 years, only 31% of fiscal notes have been completed by the due date. Now, is that evidence of a timeliness problem? Not necessarily. As we explored this further, we listened a lot to the views of people kind of at the front lines of the process, and particularly legislative fiscal analysts who not only make the request, but they also are key consumers of this information when the fiscal notes are prepared. What they told us is that certainly there have been instances in which fiscal notes have not been prepared in a timely manner. But generally, they said, for those bills that are moving through the process, that are progressing to a committee, let's say for a hearing, and that are moving forward, generally, they said, the committees have been able to get the fiscal notes in time. One of the factors that can affect the time it takes to complete fiscal notes is the total fiscal note workload in a given year. And what you see in the slide that's before you in the red bars is the total number of fiscal notes completed in each year starting in 2001. And you can see that it fluctuates quite a bit with typically larger numbers in the budget years. But then when we superimpose on that a yellow line that shows the average number of working days it took in those years to complete a fiscal note, you can see that there is some relationship here, that in the years when there are more fiscal notes completed, it typically has taken somewhat longer to prepare them. Some other factors that affect how long it takes agencies to complete a fiscal note. If the fiscal note request specifies that it's needed urgently, as many fiscal note requests are, then we found that typically the fiscal notes are typically done faster than other fiscal notes. It helps if the language of the bill is written clearly. Also, some bills are just simply more complex than others or require more complex estimates or calculations. And finally, the fiscal notes can be affected, as you might expect, by the internal process of the individual agency that's doing it. And those processes can vary from one agency to the next. We looked at the role of MMB in the fiscal note process. MMB has several tasks. We think that they do a pretty good job overall of overseeing the fiscal note process. Among the things that they do are assigning the fiscal notes to agencies, providing instructions for how to complete them, and approving the fiscal notes. But we identify in our report several areas in which we think MMB could improve. We think they should do a better job of coordinating fiscal notes that require input from multiple agencies. Some of those fiscal notes have been challenging to complete in a timely or a coordinated fashion. Also, some of MMB's instructions to agencies need clarification. And just as an example, there has been some confusion, I think, among agencies about what are the circumstances in which they might propose in a fiscal note to absorb within their existing budget certain costs that might come from a bill. Let's go back again. One final area to mention is that the information system of MMB was developed about 25 years ago. It's used specifically for storing the fiscal notes, and it's getting old. And because it uses old technology, we found, even in our discussions with MMB about possible improvements to the fiscal note process, that some of those would be challenging to implement just because the software is not always very functional, and it's hard to make changes in the format. We also looked at the extent to which fiscal notes address the impact of legislation on local governments. Now, as you know, the primary purpose of fiscal notes is to help legislators understand the state-level impact, especially for budget purposes. But for many state programs in Minnesota, we rely on local entities, counties, school districts, others, to administer the programs. Minnesota's fiscal note law doesn't specify whether fiscal notes must address fiscal impacts on local governments. However, MMB's fiscal note instructions do require that state agencies address local impacts. At a minimum, agencies do this with basically a yes or no checkbox on the front page of the fiscal note that indicates yes or no there would or would not be a fiscal impact. And over the years, 38% of fiscal notes have indicated that the relevant bills would have a local impact. Fiscal notes, however, rarely include a dollar estimate of local cost, and we found that even the narrative discussions of those local impacts sometimes leave a lot to be desired. A second way in which bills' local fiscal impacts can be shown is through what's called a local impact note. And those notes may be requested by the chairs or the ranking minority members of a tax committee, the House Ways and Means Committee, or the Senate Finance Committee. And unlike fiscal notes, these local impact notes focus only on local government impacts, not state impacts. An average of only 3 or 4 local impact notes are completed each year. MMB coordinates that process, but it often relies a lot on local agencies to provide it with input, and usually that process has taken several weeks to complete fiscal notes, or the local impact notes. Once they are completed, local impact notes aren't as visible to people tracking bills. For example, unlike fiscal notes, local impact notes are not available on the legislature's website. One other issue relates to the way that local impact notes are funded. State law authorizes MMB to receive $207,000 of county aid each year for the purpose of preparing local impact notes. And one of the things we observed is that MMB has used this aid for a variety of purposes, not just preparation of the local impact notes, and our report raises some questions about that. Before getting to recommendations, I want to focus on one more significant issue, and that is the fact that official fiscal notes have not always been requested by the legislature as bills have moved through the legislative process. Minnesota law says fiscal notes shall be prepared in response to requests from committee chairs. In contrast, what we found in other states is that typically states have laws or rules that require preparation of a fiscal note before a bill can proceed past a particular point in the legislative process. In 2011, some Minnesota committees, notably in Health and Human Services, relied a lot on informal fiscal estimates prepared by agencies rather than fiscal notes. One reason is that committee chairs are sometimes reluctant to publicly disclose through a public fiscal note ideas that they or other members may have for bills. What was unusual in 2011 was that these informal estimates, rather than official fiscal notes, sometimes continued to be the main source of information on certain bills' costs, even after the bills had been introduced. And I think the problem with this, even though we think there is an important role to be played by informal estimates prepared by agencies, the problem is first, the state's budget agency, MMB, has no review over those informal estimates. Those informal estimates are not publicly available, or at least they have not been in the past. And they're not subject to the requirements of the fiscal note law. So as we turn to our recommendations, I want to start with that last slide and just begin with some recommendations that address that point. Clearly, as we've said in this report, fiscal notes are not perfect. On the other hand, we think it's good that fiscal notes are prepared using an accepted framework for reporting impacts, and it's good that they're public documents open to scrutiny. We think it's important for state laws or legislative rules to require preparation of a fiscal note prior to a finance committee's vote on a bill's passage. And I can talk about this later if you're interested. We think there are some exceptions to that general rule that you may want to consider. But again, as a general rule, we think it's important to have a fiscal note attached to a bill that is actually moving forward in the process. In addition, we think that legislators have reasonable concerns about public disclosure of fiscal notes prior to a bill's introduction. So while we recommend that all bills have a publicly available fiscal note prior to being voted on by a finance committee. We think the fiscal note should be classified as not public until their bills are introduced. We also think the law needs clearer language to define what a fiscal note is and to specify what effects it should measure. Earlier, we mentioned how difficult it can be for agencies to prepare estimates for bills that involve big reforms or complex proposals. And in these cases, it's in the best interest of legislators to communicate early with agencies about those bills. To help ensure that the agency understands the legislative intent, if there's unclear language, that's an opportunity to discuss it and perhaps clarify it, and maybe even to talk about what assumptions might be made in the fiscal note. We also suggest that legislative committees could do a better job of planning upcoming schedules to give agencies sufficient notice of the need for fiscal notes. And we suggest that the legislature improve its orientation for legislators and committee staff regarding fiscal notes. I'm going to briefly highlight some recommendations that we proposed for the Department of Management and Budget. We think that through its instructions to agencies and through periodic reminders, MMB should be helping to ensure that agencies clearly show the basis for their estimates. Also, MMB can provide clearer instructions in a number of areas that we discuss in the report, some of which I've mentioned already, things like what is an absorbed cost, what is a secondary impact, how do you try to estimate savings on bills that are calling for fundamental reforms. We suggest in our report that MMB adopt a default due date longer than 5 days for fiscal notes. And let me explain that, because what we don't want with this recommendation, our intent is not to make it take longer to prepare fiscal notes, but rather to provide a more realistic timeline for the less urgent fiscal notes. Committee chairs or fiscal analysts would still, under our recommendation, have the option of specifying whatever date they think is needed for a fiscal note. If a fiscal note is needed 2 days from now, the requester could specify that. But if no specific date is identified, again, it would fall back to the default. And we suggest that 5 days is just not proven realistic, and to help provide legislators with a reasonable understanding of when their fiscal notes will be prepared, it would probably make some sense to push that default date back a bit. Also, in our view, pension-related fiscal notes, as I mentioned, the format hasn't worked particularly well. We can comment on more on that if you're interested. And finally, state law that authorizes MMB to receive county aid to pay for preparation of local impact notes should be followed. MMB should not use this money for other purposes unless, and there's certainly an opportunity for MMB to have a discussion with legislators about this, perhaps the law should be amended to make allowances for those other circumstances. Also, a few recommendations for agencies that sort of parallel what I've talked about already. Agencies are the primary drafters of fiscal notes, so they should ensure that they are more clear and transparent. Even if it's not possible for agencies to provide a dollar impact of a local fiscal impact, we think that agencies need to try to explain better than they have what those impacts might be. And just as we suggest that legislators initiate communication with agencies early on certain bills that are going to be complex or big, we think that agencies have to reach out and make similar efforts to communicate with bill authors as needed. Finally, our report goes through the pros and cons of some other options that we considered, and we considered them partly because we heard these suggestions offered by others. And so we ultimately chose not to make recommendations on these options that we lay out. We didn't think the case was persuasive enough. But I want to briefly touch on these. First, the legislature could assign fiscal notes to legislative staff, as many states have done. I think the question for us is, would fiscal notes be better? And I think that's unclear. What we do know from other states is that even in those states where a legislative agency prepares and is ultimately responsible for the fiscal note, they rely a lot on the executive branch agencies to provide the data, sometimes the estimates or the expertise to prepare that document. Another option that's been suggested, the option of having an appeals process for fiscal notes to establish a venue within the legislature to challenge certain estimates. I think a couple of questions to raise on this option. Can it be done in a timely manner? I mean, keep in mind that if there were challenges, they would probably be happening in the latter weeks of the legislative session when time is at a premium. And another issue is whether it's necessary, excuse me, back up here, whether it's necessary to have a formal appeals process for fiscal notes that, as I said earlier, are purely advisory in nature. The other alternative would be simply for the standing committees, the finance committees and others, to consider challenges that are being raised. A few states provide opportunities for for bill authors to include a rebuttal or a commentary in the fiscal note. That certainly could be done. It might add to the time it takes to get the fiscal note out. And one other option that we explored, some have said, well, why not just establish a process for reviewing after the fact whether the fiscal notes prove to be accurate? And that's an interesting idea, but one that is also not as easily done as it is suggested. Keep in mind, first of all, that many bills don't pass, so you would have to limit this, obviously, to those cases in which a bill passed, and then you have something to track after the fact. Sometimes the version of the bill that passes is quite different from the one on which the fiscal note was prepared. Keep in mind that the analysis would probably be done several years after the fact, so it wouldn't be real timely. And also keep in mind that agencies don't necessarily track their costs, let's say for a particular piece of legislation, apart from the rest of the cost in their budget. And it can be sometimes difficult to tease out how much effort or how much dollars of agency work went to implement a bill or to prepare a report. Some of those things are always, they're not always easy. So overall, again, the message of this report, the task of estimating the future impact of a bill is sometimes very challenging, especially when timelines are short and the number of fiscal notes being requested is large. And in fact, what we found is that sometimes problems do occur. Questionable assumptions, some mistakes, some lack of clarity about the estimates. And certainly if you are the legislator carrying a bill and a fiscal note has one or more of those problems, it can be frustrating. On the other hand, part of the message of this report is to keep in perspective that while these problems are troubling, they're not pervasive. We suggest some improvements in several key areas, and those include ensuring that fiscal notes are more clear and transparent, improving communication between agencies and bill authors, and enhancing current statutes, especially to set forth that requirement I mentioned for preparation of a fiscal note by a certain point in the legislative process. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll stop and see if there are questions.
All right, thank you. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifiers, first of all, thank you for your work on this. It's an area that I think a lot of us bipartisanly have had some concerns about in the past, and it's good to have both the education that you've offered us as well as some analysis of the process and ways we might improve it. We've all heard of the term death through fiscal note for bills in this legislature, and I think the frustration sometimes is that as we put together new ideas and model new approaches to government, that fiscal notes are not dynamic. I've heard that term. That we're not we're kind of asking departments to preside over their own execution in some respects when they're being asked to score the fiscal cost of a particular proposal, particularly reform proposals or restructuring proposals. Yet you mentioned it's not pervasive. Any thoughts at all about it? I know you mentioned that other states use legislative staff to do a lot of this. And I've heard some people say, gee, we really need a third party to do these. We don't want the departments presiding over their own fiscal notes. Any analysis or further thoughts on that?
Mr. Alder.
Madam Chair and Representative Gottwald, and Jim may wish to chime in here too. But first of all, I think, as we said, particularly when there are bills that propose a fundamental reform or restructuring, you're right. I mean, the agency that is most affected by that is the one preparing the fiscal note, and that may create a certain conflict of interest, potentially some bias in what they're saying, but they also have a lot of expertise in the programs they run, how they're implemented, and what, in fact, the impacts of a major change might be. So it's a dilemma. And it's one that even those states where they rely on legislative agencies to prepare the fiscal notes, that I think they struggle with, because the first place those agencies typically go to assess the impact of a bill is they go to the agencies. And that's not to say that's the only place that they go to, but that's a key place that they turn to. And so we don't have kind of a big bang solution to this problem, but it's one of the reasons that we suggest that particularly for bills that are complex, that involve some fundamental reform, that to the extent that the bill authors can have some early discussions with the agencies who are going to be preparing the fiscal notes, the better. That doesn't mean they're going to see eye to eye, but I think in some cases what we observed is, as we said, sometimes the language of the bill needs a little bit of work, and in those discussions, agencies come to a better understanding of what the bill author has in mind and how it might be implemented. And sometimes the bill author can get a better understanding of kind of what the assumptions are the agency is working from and how they think this would play out. So sometimes those discussions occur after the fiscal note is public and when time is really short. And again, it's not a magic solution, but to the extent that some of those discussions can occur earlier, that would help.
Representative Fatwell.
Just real quick as a follow-up, Madam Chair, I want to make it clear, too, I'm not being particularly critical of the departments. I recognize they do a tremendous job with a tremendous challenge, especially given the timelines we're giving them on some of these fiscal notes. But, you know, some of these inherent potential conflicts of interest, I think, have concerned people on both sides of the aisle. And I realize there's no silver bullet, but well, you've given us a lot to think about. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I'd second the comments that I think overall things have worked reasonably well, but there have been times when there are some issues that do surface. And I just, when I came in this morning, was literally greeted at my desk. I'll start with a local impact statement. Request went out January 12th, and I had to tell the person we're still waiting. I had checked last Friday, interestingly enough, with our chief fiscal analyst if he had heard anything yet, and we had. So that's January 12th. It's now February the 13th. So the clock is running. I'll just point that out, that that's one of the frustrations that we deal with, and sometimes that frustration is also on behalf of the public. That was a member of the public that was wanting to know if we had gotten the information yet, and but it was a request through a member initially. The other thing I would comment about, and you referenced it, I think there is a need for better communication at times. And I pulled out of my file a fiscal note from last session dealing with the establishment, and I don't want to get in a debate about whether it was a good idea or not at this point, but a state board of education that we once had. And I was quite surprised at the assumptions that came back with the fiscal note, and it drove the cost way up. But there were certain things in here, and I'll just pick a few. Travel to national conventions, $1,500 per member, an assumption that every member would go $18,000. Not the intent of the author that every single one go to a national convention of some sort. Legal fees, $20,000, just to point out another one. And it does make you a little bit concerned, because when I presented the bill before committee, and I could go through other, assuming that the executive director would be full-time and that the clerical staff would also be full-time. That was really the big cost drivers. But there was no communication from the department relative to the intent of the author on some of these issues. Which goes back to your comments about communication. And then the other thing that happened, of course, then when we did have a hearing, as I was about to point out a few moments ago, the commissioner comes in and testifies against the bill. And if I recall, part of her testimony was concerned about the cost. So here you have a bill that or a fiscal note that seems to be particularly high, at least in the view of the author, and the commissioner coming in and testifying against it. So it at least makes you wonder, going back to Representative Galtwalt's initial comments. I'm not going to make that accusation other than you kind of wonder what's going on, at least. The other thing, you know, when I chaired the Finance Committee, and I see Representative Huntley is not here right now, but the frustration we had when we had time constraints in terms of getting bills out and to get the Health and Human Services bill out. We had to, in the end, take that bill up as the very last bill out, if I recall correctly. And the reason was lack of fiscal notes. And I was the chair that insisted, and that's part of your testimony as well, that before we move forward with the bill, and Huntley agreed, we had to have a fiscal note. We had to know what a bill like that cost. I did meet with the commissioner. He brought up the fact that there was a staffing issue, and my comment was, well, you have one of the largest state agencies relative to staff members, and maybe you could at least during the legislative session figure out a way to beef up that particular activity with fiscal notes, especially when one of the largest bills impacting on state government is about to go through. You just simply need that information. And so those, I'm just expressing some of the frustration. But again, I'll say most of the time things work well, but there are times when there are concerns and glitches and leave one wondering. And you can comment if you'd like, but I just wanted to make those points.
Madam Representative Carlson, Mr. Alder, Mr. Nobles.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I'd like to offer a couple of comments. First of all, regarding ripple impact notes, on page 41 of the report, we lay out the average amount of time it's taken to prepare local impact notes as opposed to fiscal notes. And your example that you gave of having requested one on January 12th and here it is February 13th suggests that, shortly you may be getting a local impact note, but the norm has been over the last 3 years, 27 working days for a local impact note to be prepared. Again, the process is that MMB typically goes to a certain number of local agencies to try to get input to prepare an estimate, and that has, unfortunate as it's been, taken usually several weeks. Also, just regarding the fiscal note that you mentioned regarding the Board of Education, and you know, I do think that one of the things pointed out by your comments is, at least in the fiscal note, as was clear from your comments, there was some breakdown of what those costs were. And if the costs that you observed in the fiscal note for travel expenses or for legal fees or whatever seemed suspect to you, I think one of the things that we say in this report is that while it's not always the best thing to have happening when the legislature is facing time crunches and bills are trying to move through the process, there is a time and place to have these discussions about fiscal notes. And a fiscal note, again, is purely advisory. A finance committee does not have to abide by what the fiscal note says it would cost. It can make its own judgment about that. If it wants to consider input from others, it could do that. But I think it is good that, again, within the fiscal note, if it's well done, there is a breakdown of the assumptions and the estimates, and you can say, well, that seems a little high to me.
Madam Chair,
Representative Carlson.
Just a quick comment. When you say I may get that fiscal note shortly, my experience has been that sometimes when you raise a question like that in an open committee like this, things happen back at the state agency, so I probably agree that it will come forward shortly, but I'm not sure it was because it was in the pipeline already or because the question was raised here. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, you mentioned 74. I suppose I could ask Representative Carlson this question, but I'll ask you the question. What was done before 1974, before fiscal notes were used? You mentioned that's when the fiscal note process started, and then a follow-up.
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and Representative Westrom, we frankly couldn't find anybody who knew exactly, but we assume that there was an informal process. There's one state that does not have a fiscal note process and never has, Hawaii, and from our understanding, agencies are sometimes asked to testify as a bill is moving forward, but they don't have a formal process as every other state does of some sort. So I think it's just a probably in Minnesota, it was a less formal process than what we have today without a written document and something in law that spelled out what had to be in that document.
Representative Westenberg.
Madam Chair, I mean, Minnesota was like Hawaii is now. Is there any analogy? I mean, Hawaii basically just the author says, I think this will cost $2 million, and that's what we're going to book. And if it costs $1 million, if it costs three, it'll all come out in the forecast a year later. Is that, am I kind of characterizing that process right? And is that similar to what Minnesota might have done before?
Madam Chair and Representative Westrom, again, we don't know a lot of detail about how Hawaii does it, but that's the account that we've seen, is that agencies in testimony provide some indication. I assume that there's probably some back and forth between the legislative committees and the agencies to come to some agreement about what would be a reasonable assumption.
One last one.
Representative Westrom.
I suppose one explanation of that could be the budgets were smaller, there were less programs, there were less things government funded or participated in, thereby making it easier to just know what things are going to cost when you don't have as many things to be in. Is that possibly an explanation of why it worked in Minnesota in 74? Or
Madam Chair, Representative Westrom, I think certainly a lot of things were simpler that many years ago in terms of the state budget and the programs. It I'm sure was big and challenging at the time, but there were a lot of reforms that were made in state governments in the 1970s with the addition of legislative staffs and some things to kind of rationalize the budget processes. I think a lot of states around that time started putting in place a fiscal note process like we see in most states today.
Madam Chair, I lied. I guess I have one more.
All right.
To the point you said about seven states do a legislative and executive hybrid. Can you explain a little more of how that works? And it intrigues me to the points that Representative Carlson and Representative Gottwalt made. I've had that same frustration, and I have wondered if it would create a better balance of tension if both bodies had a little more power in saying what the fiscal note's going to be.
Mr. Alder.
Madam Chair, Representative Westrom, the seven states in which there is a substantial involvement by both the executive and the legislative branches, and I should add that there is an appendix in your report that starts, in fact, there's a chart on page 92 if you're interested in kind of seeing which states we put in which category. And the states where there is this kind of hybrid or joint role by those branches, I think do it in a variety of ways, but just as an example, Georgia is one of those that we said has shared responsibility. And so you've got a legislative agency in Georgia, which is the Department of Audits and Accounts, that works with the executive branch's Office of Planning and Budget, which would be like our MMB, to prepare the fiscal notes. Both agencies actually sign off on the fiscal note. And, you know, again, I don't know exactly what's in the black box of how they get from a bill to the fiscal note. I assume, and I think we had some discussions with them about, again, the agencies play a lead role, but ultimately it has to satisfy both branches in that case.
Okay. Madam Chair,
Mr. Novak,
I might just elaborate. I think as we think about how we might improve this, there are both formal and informal mechanisms that we should keep in mind. And what Mr. Alter just referred to is a more formal mechanism. And that may be useful, appropriate, and that may be something you want to do, actually have a sign-off by some legislative office. I might recommend not the legislative auditor, but but I think there are certainly informal mechanisms by which you could have your fiscal staff, so I'll throw the ball to them instead of at OLA, that they might be able to provide you with a memorandum or some other document that would give you an analysis of the fiscal note and potentially a critique of it. And I think that goes on already, but that process could be enhanced as well. When we think about how this division of responsibility should be allocated between the executive and legislative branch, and frankly we should also remember that there are some that come from the judicial branch as well as from local units of government, I think it is a matter of where you want the expertise to be, where it can be, Sometimes it is a matter of having additional staff and computer programs and data and that sort of thing. And so although we characterize Minnesota as having a predominantly executive branch fiscal note process, I think you're all aware of the fact that at least informally and outside the formal fiscal note process, we do, for some issues, have considerable input and reliance on legislative offices. For example, there is a computer program that was developed quite a long time ago with in-house research for giving you an analysis of the impact of changes, proposed changes, in education aids. There is also considerable expertise within the legislative branch for giving you an analysis of proposed changes in property taxes. So it is not just a matter of shifting from the executive branch to the legislative branch. I realize that sometimes could overcome some of the issues of credibility and bias, but you also have to have the expertise and sometimes the data resident within the legislative branch to fulfill that responsibility. And I think what I'm saying is it can be done, it has been done in some areas, and if you chose, it could be expanded.
Thank you. Representative Kahn.
Yes. Following up actually on Lynn Carlson's question, again, just using it as an abstract, not this. In that case, there had been a Board of Education before in the state. Was there any attempt in preparing the fiscal note to look at what those costs were? And apparently I'm also told by my education expert that almost every state has a state board of education. Was there any attempt to look at what the spending on state boards of education in other states, particularly state, I don't know how you'd pick a state similar to Minnesota, but, you know, is that just thinking, is that a model that one would ever use? The two philosophical questions is, when you're restoring something that once existed, did you look what it cost in the past? And the other thing, do you ever look at other states to see what similar things cost?
Well, you want to Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, it certainly should be a source of information that could be useful. Obtaining that information, again, within this time frame may be challenging, but certainly if that were a fiscal note assigned to the Office of Legislative Auditor, I think those are the kinds of resources and points of information that you would seek. And also expanding on it a little bit too, back to Representative Carlson's concern, it seems to me one of the benefits of fiscal notes, if they're done properly, is that agencies should state what they think will happen if this passes, and you as the author may say, well, I don't want that to happen. It was not only not my intent, but if this were to pass with that language and somebody took the language and didn't pay attention to my intent, which obviously occurs sometimes, you might have a concern. And so you might, having been given the fiscal note and seeing those assumptions, might want to say, for example, you might want to put a cap on what out-of-state travel could be. I realize some might attack that as legislative micromanaging, but if it is an assumption that you don't agree with, and if in fact it is action you want to at least mitigate, if not prohibit it, I think it gives you an opportunity to say no and be explicit in the legislative language. Example on staff as well. If you intend that they not hire additional full-time staff, say that in the bill. So then they have clear language on which to go back and possibly amend that fiscal note.
Thank you. Representative Anderson Bruce.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Alder, you mentioned in your PowerPoint that one of the slides says statutes authorize MMB to get county aid to prepare local impact notes, but MMB has also used this aid for other purposes. And then going on page 67, I see it says here that but also for review of local government rules, local capital projects, and other local issues that arise, but it's not authorized in state law, according to what's written on in your document, and you recommend that they shouldn't be using it. Do you know who authorizes them to go ahead and go outside the law? Is it the chairman, or is it the leadership, or is it they just take it upon themselves to go ahead and do it?
Mr. Alder.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, our understanding is that MMB has had some discussions with the legislative branch about this issue over the years, and you may possibly be familiar with some of those past discussions, but I think that the assumption within MMB is that some of these areas, like rural impacts on local governments or bonding projects that relate to local governments, I think their judgment has been that those things are similar to the work they do in preparing a local impact note, but they're different. I mean, they are in different parts of the statute, and so our reading of this is kind of from a compliance perspective, that all the law says is that that aid is available for preparing local impact notes. And if, you know, again, if there have been these discussions that are taking place, and if the legislature is comfortable with allowing MMB to use that aid for those purposes, that language could be amended. But right now, the law is fairly restrictive in the way it's stated.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Alder, did they give you any examples of where it has been used outside of the statute itself?
Mr. Alder.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I'd have to go back and look. I know that they talked about the types of projects, as I mentioned, that that they've done some additional work in. I'm not sure if I know individual projects, but maybe that's something I can get back to you on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Anderson. Sarah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, the comments that Representative Gottwalt kind of hit home with me as well in the fact that we are asking agencies to prepare these fiscal notes, and that may impact their agency. And, you know, I see that as problematic for the public to have comfort in knowing that the numbers are accurate and true and so forth. And it gives them, if we had some kind of outside group giving a kind of a overview, I think that would be helpful. But I did want to ask you, in your research, I know you said that you went and looked at different states and how they do things, which is great. But I also wanted to know if, when you're looking at the fiscal notes, did you compare the fiscal notes from year to year within the state of Minnesota, and has there been a change in the procedures that they use in putting together those from, say, 2011 to 2002? You know, have you seen a vast difference between the agencies and how they prepare these, or what numbers that they did, and did anything like that stand out?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm not aware of any really large-scale changes that have occurred in the process. I mean, basically, the process that is in place follows some broad parameters that are in statute. MMB has established instructions that are more detailed for agencies, but in our many discussions with MMB and in looking back at fiscal notes, the format hasn't changed a lot. I think there have been some tweaks over time, but probably not of the size that I think you're wondering about. I think the process has largely remained the same.
Madam Chair, if I could just, though, expand, because one thing I think that is relevant, and I think have been a concern to legislators, is that even though the overall process may not have changed that much from year to year, but sometimes estimates on proposed bills have changed dramatically. And I think that has lent some suspicion to if the holder of the office was different, or maybe not, that from one year to the next, how could we get such dramatically different estimates of costs? And some of you probably know of some examples where that has occurred. So, again, it kind of creates some suspicion and concern.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nobles, that is exactly what I was trying to get at. I'd like to know if that is something that you saw in your studies, or if that maybe isn't something you had reviewed in the process.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, we did see some examples of that, and we talked with agencies about why that was the case. Generally, and I'm thinking of a couple of examples. One was the False Claims Act from a few years ago, where when it came up in, I think, 2008, there was an estimate for a small cost impact, and the agency said, we'll absorb it. And then the next year, when there was a similar bill, it had a much larger impact. I think the issue came up also in the voter ID bills, where last year the estimates that were prepared were larger than some estimates that have been done in the previous year. When we talk with agencies about that, and I think there is something to be said for this, I mean, there certainly is the potential that agencies learn things from one year to the next as they explore an issue in more depth, and maybe they find out that their earlier estimate wasn't appropriate. I mean, that's one possibility. The other possibility is, you know, the suspicion that the agency doesn't want the bill to proceed. I mean, in the case of the False Claims Act, what the Attorney General's office told us is that in the first year when they prepared an estimate, they didn't think the bill was going anywhere. They had seen no indication that there was legislative support for it. They had a timeline of, I think, 4 days from when the request came in, and they had what they considered to be higher priority bills. So they essentially said, we didn't do a very thorough job in looking at it. And when we went back the next year and there was a better chance for the bill to pass, we knew more and had done more work. Again, it's hard to know for sure in each individual case why there were differences, but those are some of the possibilities. Agencies learning more, doing a little more research, but there's certainly always a possibility that the agency might put a spin on it, too, to try to influence the bills.
Madam Chair, if I could just add one other thing. I mean, I think we all realize we're in a very dynamic situation in terms of budgets, and I know from some agencies' perspectives they may feel that they may be in a certain budget situation in 1 year and have significant resources to absorb, for example, a bill. 2 years later or so, they may have endured some budget cuts and feel like they're in a different situation. So a bill comes along proposing the same thing, and they may say, well, now we can't absorb that as we could have in the past. So there are various explanations. I think the central point here is we need to make sure that fiscal notes are used in a way that draw out as fully and explicitly as possible from agencies what their assumptions are. And then I think, and again, I think a central theme of this report is, by whatever means, formal or informal, you as a legislature should feel fully prepared to challenge those assumptions. If you think they're off base, you ought to say so. If you don't want to accept them, that's your prerogative. So I think this process ought to be one in which those assumptions are explicit and potentially always subject to challenge.
Representative Kahn.
Okay. Well, this is, I'm a member of the Legislative Audit Commission, so I've already made these comments, but I guess I can make them again to this group. One of, over years of looking at fiscal notes, particularly prepared by a department, my comment was the one bit of information that it clearly told you was whether the department wanted to do it or not. And the prime example of that, easier when you're looking at spend than when you're looking at spending more money, is when the department gets to say they can do the activity within existing resources, which should be true. I mean, they do work for us, and we can tell them what we ought to do. So, you know, that ought to be true. Ought to be true all the time. But I've seen. I admit it's much better from the days when a fiscal note from a human rights commissioner against expanding anti-discrimination laws said was one sentence that would say this would cost untoward millions of dollars to do. And I don't think we've seen anything like that. I don't think we've seen anything like that recently. But the point that has to be made again and again, and I don't know if it's been clearly made, is that fiscal notes are advisory. And a committee chair never has to unconditionally accept the what the fiscal note says. They should have some good reasons, you know, for saying that they don't believe it and that they believe it will cost less or will cost more or something like that. But, you know, the conditions that we've seen where something is absolutely stopped because the fiscal note, it said that the fiscal note puts it outside the budget, is only a function of the legislature agreeing to that. So it's just.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, could I just say one thing in response to that quickly? And that is because we're really emphasizing here, which is an important point, that fiscal notes are only advisory and you can disregard them. Mm-hmm. But I would hope that's not the road we go down, because then they become fairly useless. And we're spending a lot of time and effort and resources doing something that we don't accept as credible. I think the real work here that needs to be done is for us to improve the quality of fiscal notes so that they are credible and that you can rely on them, although you could on occasion not. But if we come to rely so little on them, if they have so little credibility, I think it would draw into question the whole purpose of having fiscal notes. Thank you, Madam.
Representative Kahn.
Well, I'm sorry. Every once in a while, I'm really out of place in this body. But I was brought up in a discipline where all you did was question things and questioned everything that was done. And my PhD thesis actually questioned one of the most famous experiments of that time, and I ended up being sort of right. But the right enough to get a degree anyway. one of the things that I'm saying is that the questioning ought to be an iterative process, and it ought to be an intellectual process where you just don't question things because of the opposite reason from the department, that you really want the program, and so you ought to be able to have a question that goes back and forth as to what it's going to cost, or is there another way of paying for it? Like, for example, I think what was already discussed in the question about the education department, could the cost of running that board just come out of the Department of Education's budget, but make it independent anyway, and discuss what the effects of that would be? So I'm not saying that you discard them, but I'm saying that you put an honest questioning into them would be a better part of the process. And I'm saying too often they're either just, depending again on whether someone wants to or doesn't want to, they're rejected or accepted without that kind of questioning process.
Thank you. Representative Kiffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Kahn, I'd like to hear that thesis subject of...
You wouldn't.
Okay. All right, I'll take it at face value and talk to you later, Representative Kahn. In regards to the fiscal notes, I think for me it's a matter of you really do want to know the underlying assumptions. And so when I read just your summary and just some other reviews here, that's a real weak spot. It's very hard to question if you don't know the underlying assumptions. And then the process to go back and find out what they were and go through all of that, I think, is just absolutely crucial. I think the other question is about... it's sometimes been defined as dynamic scoring. I consider it just how far, in your opinion, should someone go to the plain language of the proposed bill to saying, well, we think it might cost an additional more because of this reason, or it might save this much more, and you start branching out to that. Can you just kind of explain what you feel a little bit about as far as anybody in this situation, where it's legislative or agency doing fiscal notes, how far should they go in that sort of area?
Mr. Alder.
Madam Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, I think that last question is a really interesting one, and one that I think agencies and bill authors both struggle with. We certainly saw in our review of fiscal notes some cases where there was discussion after the fiscal note came out about what the agency had assumed. MMB's instructions to agencies has been to only assess the direct impacts of the bill. And this is one of those areas where we think MMB could provide some additional guidance to agencies. For example, I think often an agency might say, well, what does that mean? The bill says this, but we have to implement it, and that might mean that we have to assign several staff to do this. They're kind of thinking about the details of how this would work out, even though the bill might be silent on that. And I think this is, again, one of those areas where the more opportunity for some early discussion between the bill author and the agency, the better. And again, I think, some examples we saw, even on the voter ID bills, for example, there were questions about what exactly it would take to implement and whether a public education campaign would be required, even though the bill language might not have said that initially. And so I think the agency in that case was left to say, well, what would we have to do to try to ensure that this bill not only does what the author said, but that it will not be challenged in court. And, you know, again, agencies have to reach some judgments on this, and their judgments may not always be what the bill authors were. So they are supposed to look at the direct impacts, but that's open to some interpretation, too.
All right, thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair, if I could, a follow-up to that. I think that is really important. I thought it was interesting since you brought up that particular one, but I've noticed in others as well the lack of discussion with authors to help clarify that. And I have never had MMB or anybody have a discussion prior to the fiscal note being released to the public. And I think that is an issue, because I think that they can be so very helpful. And I think many times authors are very open to saying, did you mean this or did you mean that or did you think of this or that? I think authors are very, very open to that. But if they have no discussion and they go blanking, in, go forward with a blank spot and don't have that input, I think they're here to serve the legislature in the drafting of their bills to help them to know and to understand its fiscal impacts. But if they have no ongoing discussion, they really lack that. Then they're just left to their own thoughts that way. And I think the legislators are also helpful. And so, you know, I don't know how or when or how that is supposed to, and if there needs to be legislative clarification. To me, it just seems common sense that you would go, and especially in a more lengthy bill, that you'd have that discussion. And in regards to the education campaign, in my additional research, there was a whole variety of expenditures, and there was no court decision that said you had to spend so much money per voter. It really varied widely as to those amounts, and yet they put an amount in that seemed to come from just they took the highest number. And there was no discussion. And so I think, first of all, in general, authors are very willing, and one of the reasons why they want fiscal notes is until you do that, you don't. But I think they should also have those discussions with authors to be sure, and they can also be very helpful. And in your recommendations, I've seen that it has gone in that direction, and so I'm encouraged to see that.
Thank you. Representative Lonchesky.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you both for being here and for your work on this. And as you both know, the finance committees, and this is the right committee for this hearing, Ways and Means, all care a lot about fiscal notes, but the tax committee really doesn't. There is a slight interaction with fiscal notes and impact notes in the tax committee, but as you both know, we use revenue estimates, so this process is really has nothing to do with the process followed in the tax committee. I just have a question. When fiscal notes started happening in Minnesota, were revenue estimates, did they begin at the same time or did that come later? And have you, and I could have looked this up this morning and I didn't, has your office ever done a study like this on revenue estimates? I mean, we have these kind of issues raised in taxes all the time, and particularly on dynamic scoring, for example, which of course no states do dynamic scoring on revenue at all. Which is, in my estimation, pretty good thing, or we'd be in a much bigger trouble financially had we done them. But have you looked at revenue estimates in the past? I know this is a separate issue, but most legislators think in terms of fiscal notes, but they forget on the two sides of tax and spend, the other side is a completely different process.
Mr. Alder.
Madam Chair, Representative Lonchesky, to my knowledge, we have not looked at revenue estimates. And regarding your question about the process and whether that goes back to the same period, one of the things that's interesting is that the statutory estimates, and regarding your question about the process and whether that goes back to the same period, one of the things that's interesting is that the statutory language regarding revenue estimates is fairly narrow. On page 5 of our report, we have it, but it basically says that revenue shall prepare revenue estimates to determine, quote, the effect of the state's tax revenues, which would result from the passage of a legislative bill establishing, extending, or restricting a tax expenditure. Obviously, there are revenue estimates prepared for more bills than just tax expenditure bills. Right. And in our discussions with revenue, that's been more of just a tradition that started at least in the early 70s, if not before, from what they told us. So it's not formally established, really, in statute quite in the same way that fiscal notes is.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could just also expand on this one, just to let you know that when we were given this assignment to look at fiscal notes, we did consider including revenue estimates as a part of this evaluation, and we met with the current Commissioner of Revenue and his staff and explored their process and talked to some legislators about the issues involved. We just decided that the real focus of concern was more on fiscal notes than revenue estimates. And frankly, it's been my observation, you would certainly know a lot more about this than I, Representative Lincheski, that I've seen committee hearings at which the people who were directly involved in creating revenue estimates, who had great expertise, were there with you in an interaction with legislators about their assumptions and about how assumptions might change, how they could turn around another analysis. Again, I think there's quite a bit of expertise in some areas of tax law on the legislative side as well, both with members and staff as well. So in some ways, from, again, my observation, there is more of this kind of dynamic interaction, if not dynamic scoring. There is certainly a lot of communication back and forth over the years, regardless of who was in control of either executive or legislative branch on this production of revenue estimates.
All right, I've got Representative Gunther, Bruce Anderson, Carlson, and Dreiling. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Either one of you testifiers, the fiscal notes always tell the cost of passing a bill and what it's going to cost. But very often a bill will also create savings to the state. And they very seldom ever mention the cost of not passing that bill. Is that something that we should look into and request at the same time? Or how do we get those costs of not passing the bill or what it will bring into the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther, I don't think I've heard that suggested. That's sort of interesting because I think fiscal notes are based on the idea that the agency is going to look at what would be the impact of a change as opposed to what's the impact of staying the course and keeping things. They could certainly discuss that in their fiscal note. If they make an estimate of the cost or the savings of changing the law, they could also, in a narrative discussion, discuss it, and that's sort of implicit that they're saying this is how this bill would change the costs or the savings compared to the status quo. But
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther, were you possibly asking about something that has been an issue, as all of you know, and we looked at too, and that is not whether or not the bill would pass, but if the bill were to pass, what savings would the actions that result from the bill's passage, what savings would accrue to the state? And I know that has been a real point of controversy. And it is an area where you're really extending beyond sort of the known in terms of tax data, demographic data, computer models, and you're sort of trying to predict what might happen. Just an example comes to mind. Actually, I don't know. I don't recall looking at the fiscal note myself, but on the Sunset Commission, it's predicated on the idea that, yes, it may cost some money to do Sunset. It may cost some to set up the commission, to have some staff, all of that sort of thing. But it's also predicated on the notion that if we do that over time, we might have some cost savings. We might eliminate some organizations. But it is more of a prediction. And as, again, Yogi Berra reminds us, making predictions is difficult, especially when it involves the future. So it's just harder to do, but I think they could, again, make some assumptions based on some look at other states, what has occurred. But I think that's what you were getting at, and I know it has really been a point of contention and controversy among members.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The realm I live in or work in, and I prefer to work in, is creating jobs. If we do something, pass a bill that will cost some money to pass it, that will create sufficient enough jobs that the outcome to the Department of Revenue will be more money coming into the state through taxes than the cost of the bill, there's a positive impact by that bill. But yet, to pass that bill without the positive impact coming into it, that being creating jobs, which also has the effect of repopulating our schools wherever that industry happens to be, and things like that. When you add all the things into there, we really show a great return on the investment of creating a way to get industries to move into Minnesota. So that other side is never put into the equation, where I think it has a great, it would pass a lot of bills that aren't being passed.
Madam Chair, I think I understand your question better. And I agree that that is something that could be taken into consideration. And I think sometimes, and you certainly know this, that it is outside of the fiscal note process, the formal process. You have people with certain economic theories, both supporting and opposed to the idea of government job programs creating jobs. You have the same issue, frankly, on the debate around tax cuts. Some people would argue from economic theory that if you cut taxes, you'll raise more revenue. Other people don't agree with that. So it sort of falls outside of the realm of fiscal notes, but I think it is a very important and legitimate discussion for the legislature to have, but you'll probably get different points of view.
Thank you. Representative Bruce Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your executive summary of the blue sheets here, it says, for the most part, agencies have prepared fiscal notes in a timely manner, and then two paragraphs down it says, but since 2001, 31% of the fiscal notes have been completed by their due dates, and that would remain 69% have not been done in a timely manner. I wonder how your first statement makes sense to me.
Mr. Alder.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, and I think that is kind of our discussion of timeliness does need a clear explanation. You're right. What we're saying is that if you look at the due date assigned to the fiscal notes from 2001, almost 70% have not met their due date. But keep in mind, many bills that are introduced don't necessarily have a committee hearing, don't necessarily proceed to a next step. And that's where we relied, I think, more on observations, comments that we heard from people like legislative fiscal analysts who are seeing bills that are moving through the process. And generally the observation they had is that even though a bill, and let's say it misses its target due date by 2 days, 4 days, that generally they were seeing that the bills that were moving ahead and were scheduled for hearings, more often than not, generally had their fiscal notes in time for the hearing, was kind of the message. So to the extent that legislative authors, when they make a fiscal note request, are aware of the due date that is assigned to that fiscal note, they are often being disappointed because those bills aren't prepared typically by that due date. But again, for those bills that are moving forward, generally the observations of those close to the process said they're getting what they need when they need it.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, sitting here I decided, you know, that when I brought up that one particular fiscal note, and there's a risk in doing that without getting too heavily involved with the bill. But I decided, listening to the discussion and hearing Representative Kiffmeyer's comments about communication, that was my main point, communication with the author. The bill that I was referencing, when the State Board of Education was eliminated, all the powers and responsibilities were transferred to the Commissioner of Education. I've got the language right here. And what this bill was doing was transferring it again from the Commissioner of Education back to a State Board of Education. Now, the only costs, in my view, would have been basically the reestablishment of a board. But all those other functions that were outlined in the fiscal note were in the base of the Department of Education. And so, in my point would be that, one, there should have been more communication, but secondly, there was a misreading of the bill, as I would interpret it, because it was a transfer back of the same functions. So per diem and to ravel might be a debatable point, but the legal fees for things like rulemaking and so on are still something that are going on within the department and are part of the base. And that's the kind of frustration that you sometimes have when you're dealing with some of these issues, and especially, Madam Chair, when you're a fiscal chair and you've got your target and a bottom line and you're trying to decide what bills you're going to hear, and that's part of this informal process. Yes, you do sometimes sit down with authors if you're a chair. Did it many times and said, I'd like to hear your bill, but right now it's too costly. Are there any things that you can do? And often at the beginning of a meeting, there would be an author's amendment to make certain adjustments to put the bill more in line with what the fiscal realities of a given division might be. And so those are some of the things that are frustrating. But yes, there is communication with the authors often. You know, sometimes even meeting with a group of authors and saying, you know, can you go back to the drawing boards and do some things to change your proposal to make it more fiscally, or increase the probability of passage because it's more fiscally closer to what the resources are that you might have available, is what I'm trying to say. But that was the frustrating thing, and I don't want to get involved with that fiscal note. Quite frankly, it was the only one I still had in my file from previous situations, so that's why I brought that one up, although I think when we talked informally, I also brought it up at that point. But it was really a transfer of powers is the thing.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I get the feeling that Representative Carlson will be communicating on that bill if he offers it again. I too, thank you. I think this has been a thoughtful and interesting discussion, and the one thing I wanted to comment on was the your recommendation for the pension bill fiscal notes, which I strongly hope MMB does take a look at doing differently, because in the Education Committee, we definitely see that the impact to the school districts with anything we do is where the real discussion should be. But yet, as you point out, the fiscal note is more focused on cost to the state, and we could, you know, kind of get the tip of the iceberg but miss the whole thing if we're not focusing more there. I'm sorry that Representative Lencheski has left, but that's because of the Tax Committee. All of the members of this committee should be aware, because of the Tax Committee having a different way of looking at things, and they don't have the fiscal notes, there is the temptation for pension bills like the OPEB bill that we had a couple years ago to leap into the Tax Committee, where they have a different way of looking at it, and then later the next year we in the Education Committee you know, see that it's passed, it went through the Tax Committee, but it didn't go through the main decision wasn't made in the Education Committee. Other bills that have passed there too end up having to be paid for in the Education Committee later. So I think that's just a general problem that we in the legislature should watch out for better. And I like your recommendation for the pension bills. Thank you.
Thank you. I just have one really quick question. You talked about in your survey of fiscal staff and the interaction with the executive branch or the governor's office, that there was no examples of inappropriate behavior. Did you define what was appropriate and inappropriate, or did the respondents just answer that question?
Madam Chair, we tried to ask the question specifically and to clarify, and obviously it required some judgment on the part of the agency staff, but we asked about inappropriate interventions or interventions in which would, and I don't remember the exact language, that would result in a less objective fiscal note, was essentially the way that we worded it. So, I mean, it certainly left them with, they had to do a little bit of interpreting and thinking back about their experience. But, I mean, our experience, too, has been at times when we have talked in confidence with agency staff or for evaluations we're doing, sometimes they're not reluctant at all to provide us with examples. In this case, we were surveying the coordinators within agencies, the line staff who are responsible for ensuring that the fiscal notes are done in a timely and coordinated manner. And they typically don't change from one administration to the next. Typically, those people continue on. So we thought we were giving them at least every opportunity, if there had been obvious problems, to comment to us. And I don't know if it was a surprise or not, but no one offered any suggestion to us that there had been any issues, problems in their mind.
But, Madam Chair, I would just caution that even though we did offer confidentiality, obviously people working in certain organizations might have some reluctance to say something negative, thinking that it could somehow, sometime come out that they had made that comment. So, and I think the other point, which I think you sort of imply with your question, what is inappropriate? Is it inappropriate, for example, for a constitutional officer to say on a fiscal note, well, this is my perspective of the impact on this organization, and I want it to reflect that? I mean, is that inappropriate? I am usually quite involved in my office with fiscal notes that have an impact on the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And it would certainly be my inclination, and has been over the years, to absorb as much within our existing resources. If you turn that over to somebody else who was legislative auditor, they might have a different perspective. And so, again, I think your question is a good one, and I think it reflects the fact that it kind of hinges on what do you call inappropriate. I think it's very appropriate for me to be involved and have an impact on fiscal notes from my perspective about what we ought to do as an organization and how we ought to utilize our resources. And so typically we don't ask for additional resources, but I know other offices would think that that's not the direction they would want to go.
Right, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. I think we learned a lot today, and unless there's any other business to come before the committee, the meeting is adjourned.